Cassie McCullough, and this is Common Knowledge, where we take a look at the things going on around us and what's been bubbling through the water cooler and try to figure out what, if anything, it all means.
And I'm Jason DiRosso, and today it's an ALP Leadership Free Zone as we zero in on what really matters.
Hello, me lovelies.
Hi, Mary.
A kooky ad campaign featuring two delivery girls on a tandem bicycle with golden plaits and the faces of bearded men.
It's a real mind worm, that one. I can't get it out of my head. And what is with the beards? Seriously, beards are everywhere you look now. Never before has part of the human anatomy been so loaded with so much cultural meaning and so much irony. But why?
That's today on Common Knowledge. And now, each week, we drag in unwitting experts and commentators to add some spice to our intellectual gumbo, and today we're lucky enough to have two.
Twice the spice.
Anthony Lowenstein is a freelance journalist, author and blogger. His most recent book is The Blogging Revolution. Hi, Anthony.
Thanks for having me.
And Tim Burrows is editor-in-chief of Mumbrella, a news and views website for the media and marketing world. G'day, Tim.
Hey, guys. Good to be here.
Now, we did say that this was going to be a Gillard Rudd-free zone, but just for the record, we want to know what your take is. Rudd's used the term soap opera this week, but is it more of a Shakespearean drama in 25 words or less? Anthony, how would you describe it?
It reminds me of a Buñuel film. That's about five words. Essentially, melodrama and Shakespearean would suggest something actually that matters, and I think we have two people who stand for very little. That was about 24 words.
Okay, fair enough. Tim?
The best soap operas are Shakespearean, and this is far better as a soap opera than it is politics.
It's interesting, actually. My favourite a news article of the week was one that appeared in the Fairfax Press, which outlined how the rest of the world really doesn't give a fig about what's going on. And the headline of the Asian edition of the Wall Street Journal was actually, Aussie politics is much ado about nothing. So there you go. Yes. Both your Shakespearean illusion. But basically the article was saying, whatever the outcome of this tussle is, it doesn't really change what the policy position is. And I think there's a kind of weariness on home shores about all this as well. Here's a mock promo that surfaced this week on a couple of the other ABC radio networks.
The Leadership Battle 2012. Every unimportant development, every inconsequential soundbite from every backbencher and two-bit pundit you've never heard of. Every last one of them.
No!
Because discussing real issues takes a bit of effort, and this stuff just writes itself. Who's got the numbers? Who wants it most? Who even cares anymore? Your favourite media outlet keeps you informed of everything that's happening in the leadership battle, even when nothing is happening at all. Absolutely nothing. At all.
Clearly a brilliant but frustrated mind at work there in the bowels of the ABC's promo department, the work of 774's Dave Williams.
It's great with graphics, though, isn't it, that sort of thing? that's why I both love and hate 24-hour news television.
What, you're addicted to it?
Absolutely. It's my wallpaper. That's what will play for me the whole time, regardless of what's happening. It's just the wonderful way of telling something inconsequential, repeating it 10 minutes later, but with amazing graphics.
And a very, very serious face always.
But they have very serious voices.
The voice
voices.
Of perpetual urgency. Mm. Now, look, we said we'd leave it aside, so we will. We'll put it right back where it belongs. Let's talk about this advertising campaign that's at absolute saturation levels on TV and billboards everywhere.
Yeah, the television commercial at the centre of the campaign, you've probably seen it, features what appear to be two young women in dresses with blonde plaits riding on a tandem two-seater bicycle through the countryside, towing a trolley full of bottles of cider. This is the product. They're delivering them from the orchard to a village pub. Now, accompanying this is a rendition of the 1970 hit The Push Bike Song by Melbourne band The Mixtures. When the delivery girls reach the village, which is a kind of, it has a 19th century feel of market stalls and geese crossing the road.
And incest.
We cut
we'll
incest.
Get that. We'll get
Where'd
that.
You read that? We cut to the reverse shot and we see the girls' faces for the first time, and they are the faces of bearded, bespectacled young men. In fact, the same faces, I think. They look like twins. Now, rather than be shocked, the elderly publican, who's also bearded, wearing a vest with a fob watch, waves a tattooed forearm in the air and exclaims in oldie-worldy British English, "Hello, me lovelies." And the tagline for the ad is, "Not as sweet as you think." The end shot features a cute bunny whose tongue suddenly shoots out frog-style to nab a passing butterfly.
We've got a snippet right here.
"You look so pretty. Hello, me lovelies.
Hi, Harry.
As you were riding along."
And that's the tongue, the sound of the tongue at the very end of that clip. Tim, what is going on in this surreal mix?
Yeah, and I think you've unwrapped it, some of it, with the tagline at the end, "Not as sweet as you think," which is, I think, where the advertising company's strategy is showing. So it's actually give the message to, because there is a perception that has to be overcome amongst hipsters and other people that cider's a bit too sweet to taste. Mm. So that's almost, you can almost see that on the brief. Okay, so come up with something slightly more twisted than it first appears. So to me, that's one element of it. And another is that kind of interrupted thing of something sort of surreal, because we all tend to go into this slight trance when we're watching commercial television. Anything that kind of actually makes us sort of pull out of it and think about what's going on is a good way of making people think about the brand a little bit more. So I think that's why we're seeing the strange things like the twins, the bearded girls, the rabbit with the tongue, all of these little surreal things just to kind of bring us in. And then, of course, yes, the fact that they're bearded is a nice little signal to the hipsters that this is a drink for them.
Well, it's a youth market really that they're aiming for, aren't they? And this kind of surrealism pops up again and again, especially in other beverage commercials from this beverage maker.
You mean like the tongue crawling?
The tongue crawling along
the dance floor, and the guy who sticks his arm down into the ice and comes out in an alternative universe, and those the deer running through the night, the nocturnal migration ad.
Yeah, correct. I mean, and one of the things about Australia is we are brilliant at doing booze ads. You know, if ever you go along to the sort of international awards, we'll sort of not do that great until we get to the alcohol category, and then we absolutely storm it, you know, with some really great ads. You know, even looking back a few years further to the big ad, you know, with all the guys running around in the field and sort of tumbling over, you know, we were sort of, you know, delivering good ads. And sometimes it's surreal, sometimes it's a sense of humour. Often, actually, it is more sort of the humour side of things. You know, we see very few booze ads which do well, that just take themselves seriously. So that, you know, that sort of seems to be the thing. But I think particularly with cider at the moment, where really it's nodding towards a slightly more kind of urban, cool audience, the sort of people you'll find sitting on a milk crate, you know.
Are they replacing the Alcopop, for example?
Do you know what? I mean, you're probably looking at just a slightly older sector. Mm. You know, it's and of course, that's absolutely one of the tightropes the alcohol manufacturers have to sort of tread when they're marketing, is you can't go for the younger audience. There are extra rules around advertising alcohol, even beyond the usual advertising rules. So you've got to be very, 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 take very, very seriously what you do in terms of how you market it. So, you know, you can't, for instance, suggest, you know, sexual prowess or that sort of thing, that it gives you that, or, you know, success with the opposite sex, all of those things. So there are limits to what you can do, which is sometimes why people go that slightly surreal route, because it's harder to successfully complain about that.
Are you saying that men with beards can't have good sex? Is that what I'm hearing from you?
Well, that would be bad news for myself, obviously.
We should point out that there is one person in this room with a beard, and it's not me.
Yes, it's probably worth emphasising that, in fact, yes, you're correct, it isn't you.
It's you, Tim Burrows. But so this is actually part of a big growth in the market for cider. I read just this week that it's $100 million plus in Australia at the moment, and growing at 35% a year.
It's growing because, of course, what we're seeing is beer is kind of stalling, you know, the kind of the beer growth a little bit less. So of course, you know, for the big manufacturers, they're looking for the next opportunity, and that's one. And what we've also tended to see is it's not just apple cider, pear cider is coming through, you know, even kind of, you know, raspberry flavoured cider.
Guava cider. I mean, guava would be a serious choice, wouldn't it? I love guava, but people don't take guava seriously as a drink.
I think in St Kilda that would play quite well.
I'm from Melbourne, so there you go. I understand that joke.
I just wanted to point out how far alcohol advertising has come. And I know you said that we're very good at it, but it's often been with humour. Here's an old one that I dug out from 1982. I think it's Morrison & Johnson, the old Mojo team.
How do you feel when the gun and the cheers tell you your first home? How do you feel? How do you feel?
I feel like a tourist. I feel like a tourist. I feel like a tourist or two. I feel like a tourist. I feel like a tourist.
So clearly we've come a long way. That's just the whole mob all together, me and my mates playing footy. I think they're actually in a yacht race in that one. I think it was around the time of the America's Cup.
And maybe one of the things we've moved away from as well is a lot of the alcohol advertising used to be around this idea that the people you're speaking to was somebody who had come home and deserved a drink at the end of a hard day. So, you know, you had that one. You had, you know, VB used to be very much around you've earned your beer for, you know, hard day's work and hard day's thirst.
There's always a man, of course, who was getting the alcohol. Clearly, you know, women, you know, weren't drinking because, you know, it wasn't very ladylike, was it? That's clearly changed.
You reckon there's only, but that's 80s. What? That's 30 years ago.
Mm. But a lot of the alcohol ads that I would have seen, like the VB ads, for example, weren't about women at all, were they? They're very much about the men.
Definitely
kind of
about
being
masculine
blokes.
Culture. Yeah, the Vic Bitter, John Mellion.
Yes.
You've had a hard day at work. Mm. Here's
now
your
I think
reward.
the surreal stuff also, which is prominent when they're advertising drinks. I think aimed at slightly younger drinkers is that the surreal stuff speaks to a whole mode of drinking, which is about getting pretty off your face, really. I mean, that's the other thing that the surreal thing taps into. It's like what you start seeing, or how you start seeing the world when
you're drinking
too many. Well, I don't know.
Well, that's a really good point, because, you know, for instance, you know, you look at something like, I think it's the Bankwest ad where the animals are talking to the people. Yeah. And again, you know, my first thought when I see that is, you know, they've, whoever they're talking to, this person has clearly consumed something if they're hearing the animals talking to them. So, yeah, there is that element in surreal ads, I think.
All right, so alcohol advertising has changed a lot, but some things actually do remain the same. And I know at the end of the day, I always feel like a beverage myself.
You're listening to Common Knowledge here on RN. I'm Jason DeRosso, and with me is co-host Cassie McCullough, and our guests today are journalist Anthony Lowenstein and the editor of the advertising and marketing website Mumbrella, Tim Burrows.
And now to the curious topic of beards. They've been creeping around the popular imagination for some time now, and I don't mean stubble, not the carefully maintained 2 or 3 day shadow that emerged in the 90s. I mean the full, proud, tickling the collarbone length beard, the kind of, I mean, you even occasionally do see the bushranger, the full Ned Kelly, down to actually to the nipple line every now and again. But with them, to me, it seems, and as we just saw in our discussion of that cider ad, they also come with a real tongue-in-cheek signalling. And I want to know what it is that's going on there. In a recent article in Vanity Fair, it was suggested that it's part of this craving for authenticity that's going on at the moment, and we've discussed that here just recently. But apparently it's part of this idea that, you know, people, while they might flock to, say, an Apple store for the glassy, uncluttered, cool 2001 kind of feeling, when they go home, they want something really different. And this is what the article in Vanity Fair said. They return to their make-believe, old-fashioned lives, brick and brownstone townhouses, beer gardens, green markets, local agriculture, flea markets, steampunk, lace-up boots, suspenders, beards, artisanal everything, all the neo-19th century signifiers of state-of-the-art Brooklyn-esque and Portlandish American hipsterism.
Yeah.
Anthony.
Yeah, well, that's
what's
what
going
Vanity
on?
Straight over to you, Anthony.
Yeah, Vanity Fair would write something like that because they're based in about two suburbs. But I think ultimately, to me, what beards often say for a lot of men, and I can't speak for men, but I'm going to try and speak for some men, is that I think, as you rightly say, years ago the whole manscaping issue, you know, that whole expression was about saying that men should be kind of clean and appropriately looking in terms of work and play. And the idea that even 30 years ago you could turn up, say, to a corporate job looking scruffy would be seen as a problem in most Western countries. I think that is now, depends, I guess, where you work, that's changed to an extent now. So you probably couldn't have maybe a bushranger beard at Macquarie Bank. Maybe you could. But generally speaking, I think it would be more about saying that you are signifying both to your colleagues, friends, and maybe lovers, men or women, a certain look. But I think also if you have a clean-shaven look, my experience with male friends who don't have beards is that they get frustrated if they can't grow one. Yeah, because yeah, some men just can't really grow much facial hair. They try, they just can't do it.
Kevin Rudd couldn't grow a beard.
Kevin has hair elsewhere. Let's not focus on K-Rudd right now. But, yes, there is a sense. And, of course, the show that I think takes this off brilliantly is Portlandia, the American sort of quasi...
It's a comedy show that satires hipsterdom, doesn't it?
Indeed. In fact,
they've got this teaser out for the second series, which is already airing in the States, where everyone in the teaser has beards. And the idea is it's a kind of send-up of the first trailer they had for the first season, which was talking about Portlandia as a place where the 90s never died. Now it's talking about Portlandia as a place where the 90s never died, but they're referring to the 1890s, which reflects a kind of thread of retro, threat of retro style.
Extreme retroism
through popular culture at the moment, and fashion and men's grooming in particular. We do have a clip from that teaser, which we're going to play.
You remember the 90s when everyone was pickling their own vegetables and brewing their own beer?
The 90s.
Yeah, everyone was knitting and sewing clothes for their children. People were wearing glasses all the time, like contact lenses had never been invented.
Wait, are we talking about the 1990s?
No. The 1890s.
The dream of the 90s is alive in Portland.
It's worth pointing out that this this song is being sung by four or five men with fantastic beards, very highly groomed 1890s guys.
I suppose also a thing that really makes me wonder is that so many of the things that are seen as cool in the 90s in the first series actually weren't that similar 100 years before. Obviously, technology has changed things. That's a given. But in terms of Portland has this sense of being critical and sceptical about corporate power, etc. That wasn't that different 100 years ago. Yes, the system in America has changed, but those things actually are the same. And the beard thing is kind of one small way. It's a bit of a finger, I think, to authority. Because years ago, the only people who had beards generally were kind of criminals, in terms of popular culture anyway. One watches, say, Mad Men, which was set in the 50s and 60s, and most people haven't got beards. Some do. Don Draper has sort of stubble if hasn't sort of shaven for the day.
Yeah, then you did actually have the beatniks of the 50s, and then some of the 70s hippies.
Well, hippies. The 70s beard, facial hair just went nuts.
I think the beard does signify a kind of authenticity and a kind of seriousness, and especially for a younger man, it is this, it's being used ironically now in a lot of cases, but it is this signifier that, hey, I'm adult, I'm not adolescent.
Is it actually a bit of that manliness?
It's like a bit of
a kind of man cave.
I think it is. And when you're talking about inner urban, predominantly white youth, hipsters, bohemian types,
of course, because
it's this lovely counterbalance to these people tending to, grow their own vegetables. And
becomes also aspirational, doesn't it? Because the sense a lot of people who might watch a show like Portlandia aren't necessarily living in those two suburbs in Brooklyn, frankly. But they might want to aspire to look different, and therefore having a beard is kind of cool, right?
The thing is, I would love to kind of post-rationalise and give you a great sort of psychological insight into my decision to grow a beard, which was about 5 years ago, which was I was covering a conference overseas and thought, I'll see how it goes. And got back for a couple of weeks later, and it was kind of good that I no longer look like a sort of prospective. Well, no longer look like a 10-year-old. Whenever I put on a suit, I always look like some sort of prospective sort of political candidate.
Right.
But it was actually
you need to rough yourself up a bit.
It was when a colleague went up to me who also had a beard and said, "It's great, isn't it? You only have to shave once a week." Uh-huh. And it was like a light bulb came on that I'd never just thought about the sheer convenience of it all. So I'd love to say it was about belonging or
an ironic statement,
or showing that I was ironically slight, I was just 10% left of centre, but no, it was laziness.
Well, look, clearly there's zillions of reasons that people wear beards, and we haven't even touched on the fact that culturally there's heaps of religions where beards are a very important part of that.
True.
And of course, through history, they've come and gone, Abraham Lincoln, Jesus Christ, etc.
But I think there's something in this thread of extreme retroism which is interesting. If you accept, and there are a few arguments that put a pretty good case for the fact that, for the idea that Western civilization is in a decadent state. I don't mean morally, but I mean in terms of economics, basically, with the rise of power, superpowers like China, economically speaking.
The GFC has challenged that a little bit, but yeah.
Well, yeah, but
We're still decadent.
In the Western, in Western civilization, there is, I think, an argument to say that we're in a decadent era. We're in a bit of a winter. And in some ways, what we do when we're in decadent eras is that we do look back with nostalgia to the past. I mean, nostalgia and decadence go hand in hand. And this extreme nostalgia of extreme retroism, looking and dressing with, you know, braces and oldie worldy clothes and huge bushranger beards like we're living in the 1890s, but we're actually living in kind of inner city areas of major Western cities like New York, is, I think, really interesting, and it's not accidental.
It comes back to that distrust of the present, actually, and that craving of
or that lack of faith in the present, perhaps, yeah. Mm.
Yeah, well, look, there's a couple of, there's a few guys who have been way out in front on this for quite a while. They're the Australian band called The Beards. Have you heard of them?
Adelaide band.
That's right. Every single song that they sing is about beards.
And they finally made an entry into the Hottest 100 this year, I believe. So their moment is coming.
In fact, just next month they're going to release an album called Having a Beard is the New Not Having a Beard. And here's the first single from that album.
And now you want to. But you can't look away. His beard is black and bushy with a hint of grey. And now you find yourself walking his way. Hey, hey, it's a consider having sex with a bearded man. You're getting these feelings that you can't understand. Sex with a bearded man.
You think the beards with their song, You Should Consider Having Sex with a Bearded Man, Tim. High rotation at your house.
Well, I think that should be on everyone's A-list, really, for A-list for the playlist.
Well, look, I would love to know if any of our listeners have beards, why they've chosen them, and if they'll be kind enough to send us a photo of their beard. And if they do, we might put it on our website. And also on the website, we'll put a link to The Beards and their new album, Having a Beard is the New Not Having a Beard, which comes out next month. And now, just before we go, to obsessing. What can't you get out of your mind? What are you obsessing about, Anthony?
Briefly, apocalypse films. And because the Oscars are shortly and The Tree of Life is hopefully going to win Best Film, although it probably won't, that the films I recently saw, like Contagion and Blindness, kind of make me think of that film, even though it's an opposite way of seeing the end of the world. Tree of Life is about the future, but also questioning where we are today, where we're going. Yes, deep.
And also, yeah. Me less deep.
Beards.
I go through these phases. About 7 years ago, I became briefly obsessed with Sudoku. And my new Sudoku is Words with Friends, the most amazing, addictive. I mean, yeah, we all know it's just Scrabble. But the fact that you can play Friends and Strangers any time, day or night, at any given time, and just that tiny click there, Words with Friends. You know, any given time, the first thing I do when my alarm goes in the morning is I check to see if anyone's made any moves overnight. Last thing at night, before I go to sleep, on the iPad, I will put it off just for 10 minutes in case someone makes a move.
I am the same.
It's so addictive.
You guys should like date.
We shouldn't be friends with words.
We should certainly play Words with Friends at the very least.
When is it too late, do you think, to make your final move? You know, midnight? Is there a cut-off there?
I wasn't even aware this was an issue, in which case I've been embarrassingly breaking all of the etiquette.
Look, I'm totally obsessed with it as well, and I find it amazing the way I'm actually experiencing the mind of the person I'm playing with, and I get quite sort of sucked into what they're thinking about and the way they're putting words down.
And I also worry that they're judging me. If actually I have a really bad set of letters and I have to put something rubbish down, I just worry they think I'm rubbish.
Oh, it's totally narcissistic.
Absolutely.
Jason, what about you?
The new Mass Effect game, Mass Effect 3, which is coming out early March, and I found this really very interesting article. We'll put a link up to it on our website, but it's called Why Mass Effect is the Most Important Science Fiction Universe of Our Generation, and it argues that it goes beyond Star Trek and Star Wars as a kind of all-encompassing global social metaphor of unparalleled breadth.
Wow.
Yep. It's going to be a big release. Looking forward to it.
A whole new world to go and explore. Well, look, we're out of time with Common Knowledge this week. Thank you to Tim Burrows, Editor-in-Chief of marketing website Mumbrella.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And Anthony Lowenstein, freelance journalist, author and blogger. Thanks for coming, Anthony.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks to the both of you. Now, don't forget you can find us on Twitter at RN_CK. And you can podcast the show or leave comments at the website, of course, abc.net.au/radionational. Follow the links to the Common Knowledge program page. Time to say goodbye. I'm Jason DeRosso signing off.
And I'm Cassie McCullough. See you next week.